Actually, there's community in Honduras. We actually gave some parts to help rebuild a community radio station down there. And now, you know, they the wife of the overthrown, thanks to the U.S., former president has now won in Honduras. And maybe we had a tiny, tiny, tiny little share in that. Who knows? All right, I got to go. Thanks, Ty, for running the board. Stay tuned for more great programming here on KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up at 9 o'clock, we've got Fight the Empire.
Good morning. This is Per Fograng, and the show is Fight the Empire on KBOO, which is your radio station. And it's up to you and me and all of us listener members to keep this station going. We've been on now for over 50 years, and we don't depend on corporations or big money outfits or anything like that. We depend on our listeners. So give us a call. The number to call is 503-231-8187, or go online to kboo.fm and click on the appropriate buttons, and you're on your way. Well, anyway, this is this show is Fight the Empire, and actually for centuries, a global production has stayed at a kind of a very low, modest level. You know, rulers came and went, and great cities and palaces were built, and with the resources that were close at hand. Then in the late 1700s, around 1800, there came a very steep rise in global production, and that was based on the use of coal and oil, sort of the energy that was centuries old, embodied in these minerals that powered the Industrial Revolution. And people at that time, you know, people had a tendency to think that whatever happened in their lifetime was sort of the rule for forever, and they thought that this production would go on indefinitely. And but then after this century, we find that many resources will be gone forever, and there are probably people hope that there will, that when mineral resources are gone, that there will be, we will find substitutes. And that is not guaranteed. In fact, probably for some of these mineral resources, and there are no substitutes. And then we sort of have to think, what happens then? What kind of economy would we have without the mineral resources that we have come to rely on? And so this is really something worth thinking about. One article about this, this is an article by Nafees Ahmed about the oil system collapsing so fast that it's sort of a surprise in a way, but this is from the article by Nafees Ahmed. He writes, a team of French government energy scientists are warning that the collapse of the global oil system is coming so rapidly it could derail the transition to a renewable energy system if it doesn't happen fast enough. In just 13 years, global oil production could enter into a terminal and exponential decline, accompanied by the overall, turn the page here, by the overall collapse of the global oil and gas industries over the next three decades. But this is, Ahmed goes on to write, but this is not because the earth is running out of oil and gas. Rather, it's because they are increasingly eating themselves to stay alive. The oil and gas industries are consuming exponentially more and more energy just to keep extracting oil and gas. That's why they've entered into a downward spiral of increasing costs of production, diminishing profits, rising debt, and irreversible economic decline. This is based on the concept called EROI, and it stands for Energy Return on Investment. And what is happening is that over the years that the investment required, first oil wells were actually, I think, in Pennsylvania, and they sort of dug down a few feet and struck oil, and then the oil just kind of gushed out on its own because of the pressure that was locked in. But that time is sort of past. Now to get oil, we have to drill thousands of feet under the ground or under the oceans. We drill horizontal drilling, which leads to what the basis of the oil fracking industry. So it's getting harder and harder just to find these resources, because we have sort of, I guess, a human nature that you pick the easy stuff first. You know, if you have an apple tree and you want an apple, you pick the one that's closest at hand. Well, you do that over a period of time, and the apples are further and further away. So this is what is sort of happening with our extractive resource economy. If people want to call in with a comment or a question, please do. We welcome your comments. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Give us a call. This is your radio station. You have a voice in it. So also, one of the things what happens is that when it costs more to get the resources, this leads to a kind of inflationary economy. And so, let me talk a little bit more about the energy return on investment. The key to understanding all this is it was pioneered by a systems ecologist named Charles Hall. And that the EROI measures how much energy you must use to extract energy for any given resource or technology. And this sort of metric works as a simple ratio that estimates the quantity you can get out for every single unit of energy that you put in. And so obviously the higher the ratio, the better, because it means you get more bang for your buck. And so at one time the resources in 1950, the EROI of global oil production was really high, about 44-1. And this meant that for every unit of energy we put in, we were getting 44 units out. And so this is a kind of a wonderful ratio. So, but the point is, it is too good to last. And so by 2020, it went down to around 8-1, and is projected to decline to around 6-1 from 2040 onwards. And so by 2024, within the next 4 years, the amount of energy we are using for global oil production is going to increase to 25% of energy production. So in other words, the world will be using a quarter of the energy produced from oil just to keep on producing it. And I suppose at some point it might reach a some kind of a point of no return where there really it becomes you get so little back from the amount of energy you put in, it doesn't get done anymore. So this is the kind of predicament that we are in as far as global energy goes. And this also leads to, this is one of the reasons for the inflation that people are talking about. And so if people do want to call in, we welcome your calls and comments, 503-231-8187. Also, since KBOO depends on its listeners for support, we would like you to help keep this station on the air. It's your radio station. No other radio station allows its listeners to help run the station. We have a board of directors where you can go to their meetings, and you can serve on the board of directors yourself. So this is the kind of this is what KBOO is. And so we have a problem in the economy, which has been talked about quite a bit lately, of inflation. Prices keep going up. And the question is, why is this? Because right about now, energy is vastly underpriced, like it has been since the beginning of the industrial age. When you buy a gallon of gas, who pays for the pollution, the carbon it emits, which heats up the planet? Right now, nobody does. But over the next few decades, somebody is going to have to, because we're going to need that money to rebuild all the cities and towns and systems wrecked by flood and fire and drought and plague. And who is that somebody going to be? And the writer of this article says, well, it's probably not going to be the energy companies. It's probably going to be you, since they are powerful and you are powerless. And what happens is, as the price of energy rises, the price of everything has to rise too. Because the truth is that our civilization is still about 80% dependent on fossil fuels. The problem isn't the electricity grid, it's that making things like steel and cement and glass still use gas.
We have a guy on the phone.
The world has just one fossil fuel free steel factory so far, but our civilization depends fundamentally on all these things. And this adds up to the price of everything. And for the authors.
Guy's on the phone.
We have somebody on the line. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hello? You haven't mentioned your name.
I thought I did. My name is Per Fogring.
Yeah. And first of all, in terms of what you're talking about, the sooner that system collapses, the way I look at it, the better.
Okay.
Although I use fossil fuels in my car, I could live without it. But mainly, when I heard this segment starting at 9, you know, I think back, Per Ågren, to the times when I would be listening to Talk of the Nation, and you seemed to be almost a regular guest. And I wanted to ask you, did you ever become a kind of a regular commentator on Talk of the Nation?
I was never a guest on Talk of the Nation. I did call in one now and then, and
right, and I heard you, and I could all recognize your voice, and you always had very eloquent responses to whatever the show was.
Yeah, that was a pretty interesting show. I used to, I guess the it went off the air. I think the host of that program, his name was Neil Conan. I think he passed on, but anyway, that was a pretty good show. And I did call in. I didn't always get on the air. You know, you call in and they kind of put you on hold, and then the show was over.
Right, and there was also Ray Suarez. Remember?
Oh, I remember him. Yes. Uh huh. Yes.
Yeah, he was there, and then he left under some kind of weird cloud. But anyway, you know, getting back to fossil fuels. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a kind of a tragic story, and in some ways, the complete destruction of that system is maybe the only way we're gonna survive this planet. But that's all I wanted to say, and it's really, really nice to hear your voice.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, and I will call in with my donation soon.
Please do, because your donation keeps everybody on the air, including you. So give us a call when you can. Thank you for your call and your comments. So if anybody else has a call or a comment, question, the number is 503-231-8187. We were talking about inflation, and from the beginning of the industrial age, our economy has externalized its costs, and so they've been sort of laid on the future generations. So we are paying until we pay for the pollution that this industrial age costs, that the results of that, the bad consequences, are being passed on to future generations, basically our children and our grandchildren, which is not very responsible parenthood. But anyway, this is what I guess right now, you know, our economy, our society is trying to correct this, trying to clean up our act as we do it, without passing the buck. But it adds to the cost. This is one of the reasons why we do have this inflation, and so there's probably more inflation to come as the amount, the percentage of these external costs rises. And so you might say that this is our last century for oil and gas. A lot of the mineral resources that we have come to depend on, they will run out sometime in this century, and after that, we we will be stuck. We'll be we will have to sort of get back to a you know, even our renewable energy technology requires materials that are not renewable. And so, like, solar power requires photovoltaic cells, and wind power uses these giant turbines that require manganese, molybdenum, nickel, zinc, and rare earth minerals. Renewable electricity is stored in batteries using copper. Electric vehicles require cobalt, graphite, lithium, manganese, and rare earths. And a lot of these materials come from just a few countries. Most of our cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo. China supplies rare earths, and Argentina and Chile produce most of our lithium. An electric car, this is according to the International Energy Agency, uses six times the minerals of the old-fashioned gas guzzler. And all of these minerals are growing scarce, with peaks sometime in this century. Oil has enough for 46 years at current production. Natural gas, enough for 58 years. Phosphorus could run out in 50 to 100 years. And aluminum, there's lots of bauxite in the ground, but the mining and smelting use a lot of energy.
Mark is on the line.
We have a caller on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Pierre. Thanks for your passion, and thanks for KBOO. I want to recommend an economist, Gerd Zeitler, who wrote a book promoting sustainable economics, The Neoliberal Vicious Circle.
Mm-hmm.
The 21 elements of the neoliberal vicious circle. He explains that market liberalization is the cause of mass unemployment and exploding inequality and foreign exploitation, and is also proposed as a solution. I also want to recommend the website.
Let's go back to that first. Who is that author again?
Gerd Zeitler, Z-E-I-T-L-E-R.
Z-E-I-T-L-E-R, okay. What was the name of the article or the book?
Well, the book is Promoting Sustainable Economics, Neoliberal Vicious Circle.
Uh-huh.
And I want to recommend a website, libcom.org. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't. Tell me about it.
It's actually a festival of anarchists. Writings, 20,000 writings, including Peter Kropotkin, The Conquest of Bread, Mutual Aid, Oscar Wilde, The Soul of Man Under Socialism, and a great economist that totally suppressed, Gunter Anders, who wrote The Obsolescence of Man. He also wrote We Are Eichmann's Sons, and Visit Beautiful Vietnam.
Those titles are very intriguing. Can you tell us a little more about them?
Well, he explains that we are really a sorcerer's apprentice. We've lost our independence and our personality because of the machine, that we are servants of the machine. We've lost our critical capacity. He says the job, this is very interesting, the job is actually a mask and a function, that people in an enterprise are similar to workers in a concentration camp, and that they constantly say, I had to do it. This was my job, you know? Well, that's a little too critical for people to hear, you know. So he's been totally forgotten for, 60 years. Most of his writings were from 1958, but it's a 300-page book, The Obsolescence of Man, so I strongly recommend it. Mm-hmm. We seem to be listless as we are guided into some health dictatorship. There seems to be no public life, no debate culture.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the mayor of Portland should be helping the homeless. There are a myriad numbers of things that he could do. Give people free transportation, free bus passes.
That's a wonderful idea.
Or yes. free storage, right? Mm-hmm. Or free food. And yet he's totally inert and insensitive. I guess that's kind of typical, but I wish they could build a village of SROs by the old post office. It seems so obvious, seems like a no-brainer, unless the poor are just invisible and the only ones who count are the propertied. Portland used to be a place of low rents and charitable people, and you have to encourage public spirit, and trust between the generations. A helicopter money is one way, because we seem to be so lacking in imagination. We can't put community centers together. There are 26 community centers in Vancouver, Canada, and they make all the difference. People have a stronghold in the modern world. They have a reference, and we simply can't learn. I mean, we don't even recognize Canada in the corporate media. It's what a shame that is. Canada should be our teacher and our friend. It's our main supplier of oil, and yet they're totally ignored. There's so much we could learn in terms of transportation. They have a computer-operated light rail goes through the whole city, and healthcare, and of course community centers. Community centers could be like a third way beyond the state and the market. So Portland could be something other than just an exhibition of political, of state failure. That's my two cents. So thanks for your passion.
Well, I want to thank you for your call. If anybody else wants to call in with a comment or a question, 503-231-8187. We've got about 4 minutes left in this show, so if you're going to call in, do it now. But it's very interesting what the listeners said, the city has changed so much. At one time, Portland was a smaller city. It was kind of a nondescript place. It was kind of left alone, but then people kind of discovered Portland, and it became sort of a place to be, a place to live in, and some of the big money flowed in, and they have sort of changed the city quite a bit. You talk to people who have lived here all their lives, and of course, I suppose this is pretty common everywhere. People, as the economies change, people remember what they think of as the good old days. But it's possible that in some ways the old days weren't so bad. That they, cities can go downhill in many ways. And when you have a city where you have people with money at the top, and a lot of people living on the streets at the bottom, this to me is a very obvious sign of dysfunction, of an economy that doesn't work. It just it shouldn't be that way. It's kind of it kind of loses all sense of humanity. You know, we have, you know, with the rents, with the rents on some of these penthouses and in the tall buildings, you know, are astronomical. In the meantime, you have people actually living on the streets in cheap tents, and you know, this should be such an obvious sign that the economy is not working for everybody. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk about cleaning up the streets and providing a sort of a refuge for the homeless. In some ways, I think for some people, just sort of get them out of sight where they can be out of mind, because it kind of it spoils their view from their apartments to see all these tents on the streets down below, and maybe they don't want to go out anymore. So this is kind of what our economy has come to. And so as resources get used up, this is you know, can will probably get worse until either if we don't find a substitute, we learn to do without. And so that is sort of some ways I think of this as the a climax century. And I hear my music, and so it's time to end this show. Thank you for your listeners. Thank you for listening and for calling in. Stay tuned, KBOO, your radio station.